Welcome to the Communist Current Podcast. In this show, we talk about communism from a current affairs perspective. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the People's World article, Native American Communist Topples Incumbent Council President in Wisconsin Town, written by Earchill Johnson, May 7, 2019. When this article came out, it caused a huge stir around the world. A lot of people were really interested to hear that a communist had been elected to city council somewhere in the United States of America. So without further ado, I'm going to read this article off. Not in anyone's wildest imagination was an openly communist Native American challenging the city council president ever expected to win the election. Talking about his opponent, Matil, Whitebird said, "I asked him to come and have a town hall debate. He would always respond that he was too busy." Whitebird ran an old-fashioned working-class political campaign. He had a small but dedicated group of volunteers. He went door-to-door and held community meetings. The main message of his campaign was higher wages, affordable housing, and more homeless shelters. Not exactly the militant indictment of capitalism many communists have been stereotyped as always putting forward. Now in a position to act on his campaign promises, Whitebird plans to introduce a city ordinance to increase the minimum wage. "By admitting I'm a communist, I cast a beacon for those who oppose me, but also for those who agree with me," Whitebird said, seeing his election as an opportunity to build a coalition around working class issues in the city of Ashland. So in today's episode, we have Wasaya Whitebird with us. What's up, Wasaya?
Not much.
So I have a bunch of questions. I'm sure you've been asked a lot of questions since the election, but sure. I'm hoping you could answer a few more for our listeners today.
Of course.
So the first thing I want to ask is, what made you become a communist?
Well, back when I was in college, I had just do like a little assignment, and this is kind of just a small story, but it's what got me into it, was that for American government, we're supposed to do like this morning thing where we look up all the list of the parties in the United States. As I'm scrolling through, I'm like, what? The Communist Party of the United States? What is that? What is communism doing in America, you know? So I check it out, and the history was pretty decent from the 30s, you know? So I was like, okay, they aren't that bad. So after that semester, I got out and I was like, you know what? I'm going to read the Communist Manifesto. I read it, and I was like, he's right. So I joined the Communist Party to learn some more, and I've been in the Communist Party of the United States since about 2011, 2012.
Okay, that's really interesting. Yeah. I also started off with reading the Communist Manifesto.
It's a classic.
Absolutely. Another question I wanted to ask, I mean, you recently ran and won an election in Ashland, Wisconsin. I was wondering if you could tell our listeners about it who aren't as familiar with what went down in May.
All right. So synopsis is that Ashland's a relatively small town with about 8,200 people in it. The ward I represent is Ward 6, which is comprised of about some 875, 950 people around that range, give or take. And the election that happened was between me and the former city council president, David Matil. And the election drew 42 against 52. And I won with 52.
Nice.
Yeah. And, so when you think about like 975 people out of, and then only about less than 100 vote, it tells you how people participate in local elections, which is surprisingly low because it's really important. Probably, if anything, local elections actually probably matter more to you as a person than they do for the presidential election.
Mm-hmm. I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm. If you're worried about where your city's money is being spent when they get money from a higher level of government, that is your local government is where you have to go to get those answers. And if they're spending it on frivolously on police stations or subsidy high road development projects for corporations, then that money is probably not being as well spent as you think to hope it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So, and plus there's, you know, how much human resources are being dedicated to your community, and is there a deficiency in that gap? Here in Ashland, we have a sufficient lack of good, affordable housing and housing with some decent quality, you know. And then, you know, we also have a deficiency in the amount of shelters we have for people who are destitute and really in need. So there's a lot of homeless here. What little shelters we do have are always brimmed out at capacity. And so there's a strong need to try to meet that need for here in our community. Right now, there's a discussion going on about a proposal for funding a police station, which I've been ardently against because I don't believe the funds that are almost exclusively allocated to where that police station draws its funds from should be spent as a new police station, in the sense that we should be probably allocating those funds to try to alleviate the burden on local institutions, but most of which I find are through private charities. And there's a whole discussion there that I won't get into at this segment, but
that's fair.
The synopsis for me is that local governments should not be relying on charities to provide for people, the general public, the basic needs of when people are at their most destitute.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in trying to meet that, I'm not trying to fund a police station. There is an argument that if the police get their own station instead of being at the City Hall building, that we'll be able to free up those spaces for other governmental offices, like the Department of Workforce Development, or potentially something like that. If it should happen, then I'd probably try to get something that'd be more pro-labor there. But there's a discussion to that, but right now I don't feel that the money would be best spent at a police station. And so how to move forward with that is to say, well, we have a housing deficiency. We could try working in housing projects. In Bed River, there's a housing development project going on for about the same price as our police station. And there's going to be something of around at least 10 units being developed. So it would be a substantial help. At least, and so, yeah. Mm. I just don't feel that a police station is really worthwhile in the community at this moment. I've been hearing about the police station for like months.
That's fair.
Yeah, the police station discussion in town here has been going on for years, and just a lot of people are divided on it for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm. The way you made it sound is that the people pushing for this are often the people with the most income.
Especially not so much for the police stations, more so for government subsidy for like roads and whatnot. Those are the things you really have to watch out for. This police station is at the lowest cost it really could be, but I still don't believe it's a good pedagogy when we still have our homeless shelters at max capacity. Even discussing for a most progressive law enforcement agency that might be available, then you have people who are out on the street, and they'll get call complaints, and it's wasting the police's time, because we're basically not trying to make sure that we're basically trying to make sure that they don't, that these people aren't getting arrested. And so providing people with shelters in the community would be a big relief for the wider community, for people who don't want to see homeless people who don't want to for the officers who don't want to deal with the moral issues of having to arrest or evict somebody off of premises because they're homeless, etc. There's dimensions to that. So for me, providing the shelters and whatnot is a priority of the sorts in the community.
Mm-hmm. And it absolutely should be.
It is. by all means.
So another thing I wanted to bring up, I can't name any other elected officials that are communist anywhere in Canada, the United States. How does that feel?
I want to say mildly disappointing. I'm glad I got it. I'm glad I guess I'm getting attention. I never expected this much attention, though. the big aspect is to say that I want to see other people winning elections abroad and more frequently, so that way my election is not a big deal anymore.
And that's a very fair point to make. It's like, it must be very bittersweet.
It is. I've been seeing articles coming out of France. Congratulations from the Communist Party of Canada and so on, and some other parts of the world. And it's like, you know, folks, I just won a small town election.
Yeah, the way they make it sound, you just gone to like federal office in Washington.
Feels, for the amount of attention I'm getting, that's what it feels like. that's just how I feel.
But it's still good. I mean, a lot of people see you as a symbol of hope for this movement.
I would like to think that other people are going to try to take after this, because it's very important for us as communists to be able to engage in the public sphere and explain our ideas, mm-hmm. Our history, and sometimes even our history. And by God, you know, if it's okay, it is okay to admit that you don't know a part of history, of questions you're going to be asked, because there is an entire plethora of history that is completely not talked about in Western academia, that is taught throughout the K-12 education system, like, for example, that we have here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And what you do get is very limited, at least from what I've been. So that's what I guess I kind of got to say, is that when we have people who talk about communism in the West, it's often like they're at least in public eye, it's often like CNN or you got Fox News, talk shows like Alex Jones and other radio right-wing radio talk show hosts who have nothing to say but blatant fucking lies about us.
Yeah.
So you know, engaging in the public sphere, being a communist, you're putting yourself forward as a person who people can kind of come up to and say, you know, so why communism? Why are you communist? And so you get these sorts of questions, and it's important to be able to answer these. You're only one person if you're doing this alone. So it's good to have a lot of people trying to do this. And the importance of cadres to help also answer a multitude of questions can help alleviate a lot of the personal burden on you for being able to answer some of these more academic questions. But at the end of the day, be honest. You know, if you don't know something, you don't know it, and say that you don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, certainly.
I often say that I think a good communist is someone who is always learning and says that they always have something new to learn.
Certainly. I've been at this for almost a decade, and I'm still learning.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So another question I had is, what were some of the most challenging moments of your campaign?
Challenging moments. The probably one of the more personally challenging moments was trying to find time between my work and doing the door-to-door runs and having the meetings, as I still do. I still keep my meetings up every Tuesday at 2:30 over at the local coffee shop at Black Cat. And I plan on keeping doing that throughout my tenure here in my office. So I always give people a place to talk to in public. But nonetheless, probably it was going door to door and finding the time and energy to do that after work it helps to be able to keep moving. But don't stress yourselves out, though. That's the really important thing I want to know. Otherwise, folks might risk getting burnt out.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen that way too much, people getting burnt out from political work.
Mm-hmm. It can burn you out after a while. I mean, when you go door to door, nobody, at least, I don't know, maybe some other people are really wealthy, but for me, I wasn't getting paid going to door to door. And I had to find some money for my own campaign that I paid for out of my own pocket. I mean, for getting the print set, I had my own ink paper, for getting the mailings done, which I did before the end of the campaign, for my local ward. It was about $400 or so at the end of the cost for everything I took out of my own pocket. I will say some folks were nice and they helped contribute to the campaign by having like yard signs and stuff, you know. So there's that to note. But in the United States here, or at least from the state of Wisconsin and my town, is that if you go over $2,000 for your budget for your campaign, you have to report every dollar and paying taxes to the IRS on the funds that you get. So running in small towns is probably more feasible to do that within that budget. And if you can, and if you even have that sort of money. And
Oh
the
yeah.
other, yeah, you gotta be very fortunate to have a bank account that isn't always getting overdrawn, you know. So
It sounds interesting, the dynamics with such a small population running in that election. You said how many days was it that you took to door knock your ward?
Well, I mean, technically, you could probably cover every section of the ward if you took a whole, if you took like the whole sunlight day, and then and maybe a second. So you spend this out over however much you're comfortable and time. So you probably say for about all the residences, apartment buildings, whatnot, you probably got about 10, 20 hours of work ahead of you.
And that's not bad.
No, no. In larger cities, it's probably you probably got a lot more ground to cover, and you're probably gonna need a lot more people to help. For me, I what did I mostly went door to door knocking by myself, and I was the only one representing myself going door to door, so I could do that within my own means. For more larger metropolitan areas, probably one person probably is gonna have that time between work and but not be able to do that with and not be overstressed. And even then, it may not be physically possible to do it in more metropolitan areas like, say, Chicago, New York, or something.
Well, even in my own city, you may not know, but I'm running for member of federal parliament, London North Centre, which is a riding in my city of 100,000 people.
Oh,
Though the
dang.
riding is 100,000, the population is closer to 350,000. But it still presents the same issue of when I later on, I'm going to have to be trying to volunteer canvassing teams if I want to even cover a quarter of it.
Yeah,
Especially with how spread out the housing is in some areas.
certainly, especially for more sparse populations out by the rural countryside. For example, if you're doing a county election, where you have to go out in the boons, you have to get a vehicle or something, or at least get somebody who will help you by being a driver who has a vehicle. It will help immensely to have some assistance with that. And by the way, best of luck in your campaign.
Oh, thank you so much.
No problem.
So, talking about campaigns again, and I can also share some personal anecdotes, but what were the most memorable moments in your campaign? Did you have any like funny interactions with people at the door or anything that really stood out to you?
I had this one guy. He opened the door, and I told him, you know, for my campaign when I was mentioning the fact that I was working to increase minimum wage, and I'll get to that more discussion that in a moment. But when I was go when I went to this guy's door, and I says, so I told him my campaign, and that I was looking to increase minimum wage throughout the city at a bracket level, so that way a more successful company has to pay more for their workers, as they, in my opinion, rightfully should. This guy said, sorry. That would affect my employer too much. Have a good day. And he closed the door. And I know for a fact this guy's a liberal. And I'm just like, wait. I know this guy's a liberal. Really, folks, like don't trust liberals as much as you want. And I'm gonna exemplify a little bit more on that pretty soon.
Okay. I mean, I had a pretty funny encounter only a month ago. I went up to someone's house, it was like three people sitting out on their patio, and I introduced myself as the communist candidate, and one of the people said, "Communist? I don't believe in communists." And I just answered back, "Well, I exist."
Shit, that's good.
Yeah. That was a pretty good one. I got them all to laugh, even though they didn't support me. So that I came away feeling pretty good from that encounter.
I don't believe in communists, but why, here I am in the flesh. Sorry.
It's boogeyman.
Right? Oh man, sometimes you might as well be the boogeyman when it comes to being communist in the West.
Oh yeah,
Wow.
and I think that's why running in these elections is so important when they see that you're an actual flesh and blood human being and they don't think that you're some sort of cartoon villain from a red era from the Red Scare era.
Yeah, it definitely goes quite a ways to be able to have interpersonal discussions with people and be a communist and get people to understand that we're not the boogeyman that the right wing talk show hosts have been telling people for decades.
Now you talked about you do weekly meetings at a coffee house. Do you have a good
Yes.
relationship with the owners?
The owners don't mind. They probably just more think of it as people come to the coffee shop to buy stuff, so they aren't gonna make a big fuss about it. That's probably my.
That's fair. I just wondered if there was any interesting history around that.
Well, the coffee shop I did find used to be like a kind of like a union meeting gathering place way a long time ago. So I'm not sure if the owner is necessarily aware of that history, but it's something I was made aware of just like last week. So I was like, oh, that's interesting to know we're having that sort of history here at this place that we're talking about when we talk about trying to what we can do in the community to better the most destitute and working class folks of our community. So.
So another question I had is, what were some of the most challenging moments in your campaign? Was there anything that really stuck out to you as unique?
Uniquely being obstructed. Not so much locally, but I would say probably one of the more interesting moments was when my opposition candidate kept refusing to have public discussion with me. It wasn't even so much because I was a communist, because and speaking the truth, when I campaigned, it's a nonpartisan election, so you're just basically just running based on your name. So with this guy though, he didn't consider me a threat to his campaign, or at least a threat to his incumbency. He thought because probably he was enjoying his incumbency, then he wasn't going to get unseated by a challenger. But here we go. So don't underestimate the fact that you're going against an incumbent. Sometimes it's exactly what's needed.
Also, don't underestimate a communist.
Yes. when you see what brought about the entire attention of being a communist was after the election, the local newspaper asked, so are you a communist? And I was like, yeah, look at the hemicycle on my hat, man. Come on. So then they took a picture, and then I was on the front page. Local communist wins election. Oh,
Yeah,
I was
I've
like,
seen people
oh,
say that was the best news of 2019.
wow. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, the best news I've probably seen too. Probably the best news I've seen too.
I bet.
Oh man, it's been very interesting for getting the amount of attention that I got over a small town election.
Yeah, and I mean, that leads me to really ask the question is what are your future plans? I mean, surely there you have some short-term plans, but what happens after your term's up?
Well, I mean, if I either resign my at a position, or I should get unelected, then there are other options for engaging in local politics. There's the county board, theoretically a person could get on the school board. Then there's always potential for getting involved with more for more state level politics. So people in the community have been kind of pushing me to try to get engaged with the state level politics, and they aren't even necessarily communists themselves. It's like my platform. So I'm like, oh, okay. I guess you just really like everything I've been saying. Okay. And that's interesting to know that I get that sort of support from people who don't explicitly align with my political ideology so much, but they align with my campaign. And that's the big thing I really want to push people in their campaign tactics, is that if you're going to campaign, campaign largely on what it is you're doing. Don't engage in the stupefying slandering so much between parties and so on. What a lot of super PACs do in the United States for slandering is that they can't use super PAC money fund to necessarily endorse a candidate. So what they do is slander the other candidate.
Right.
Don't engage in that. At the moment you seem like you're slandering the other candidate, you just maybe that's my opinion on local level politics. If you spend a time slandering somebody, it brings into question that somebody should be asking, okay, so if they're busy slandering this other person, why aren't they telling us more about themselves?
Right. And we see that same kind of election tactic even here in Canada.
Slandering, as far as like ad campaigns, is not my style, I guess.
Right.
But for recommending folks who are doing other sorts of things, focus on the issues, dive on the issues, and be really critical about what your community needs or what the people you're trying to appeal to need. One of my interesting takeaways on examining the Communist Party policy is that, and it's very little known, but the Communist Party USA had this little line, and I took this very, very, very personal to local politics, is that we don't want to increase taxes on homeowners. We want to increase taxes on the rich.
Right.
So when we're talking about raising taxes at the local level, you'll find a lot of overlap with people who might otherwise seem more right-wing in their concern, at least in their politics, but more or less there is genuine concern there that by increasing taxes on homeowners for their monthly tax increase or their yearly tax increase, however you want to measure out through the span of time, that we're effectively pushing poorer people further away from the concept of home ownership. So I do believe there's overlap there for folks who are generally concerned about homeowners in like something like a city level election. So, trying to find revenue, other sources of revenue through like joint ventures, say something I've been going for and talking with the tribe, is try to work out an idea, concept, venture that would allow us to allow both the tribe and the city and potentially the county to draw dividends on an enterprise that would be for profit, but that would only exclusively be interconnected through municipalities, public enterprises, and close off any financing options from the private sector, as to not draw dividends, as to not provide loans, strictly keep it all public.
Right. So another, I guess another thing I wanted to ask before we end the interview, what advice would you give to other communists who are listening to this podcast?
Run an election so where I can see you in the newspaper and be like, that's my comrade. consider running for a local election if you're serious about being a communist who's going to be involved in their community and provide exemplifying example of what a communist is in the West.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us need to really work on being that person in our community that people can go to and or at least can hear from.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
there's a lot of people, especially in the, social media age, are feeling the result of alienation. And definitely people are feeling a lot like they can't get involved in politics. And I'm glad to see that there's a shift with that, especially with like grassroots communists getting involved in politics.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's important to one, be able to connect with the community and also be honest in the sense that you are a communist, but don't be that, you're providing an image that is different from the boogeyman that we're always told. And so it's very important for that. There are going to be people who you might run into that are probably going to believe that boogeyman concept. Just be as cordial as you can and say, well, just say to them if they're gonna not change their opinion, no, just say, well, have a good day, move on to the next person. Because at the end of the day, you can't appease everybody, no matter what spectrum you're on. But where you want to find an overlap where you can.
No, absolutely.
You don't doesn't but just because you find overlap, it doesn't mean that you have to how do I say? It doesn't mean you have to give up what you discuss or whatnot. For me, my stance is that if I find overlap with somebody, I work with them on it. It does, for every other issue that I don't agree with them on, I simply don't work with them on that. So, but some other folks maybe more or less inclined to negotiate tit for tat. I don't like that, but that's just me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Wasaya.
It's been good. Thank you for interviewing me.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for coming on. I was really excited to hear from you.
As I'll be sure to be listening to the podcast much in the future. Thank you.
Before we end today, I'd just like to give a shout out to our supporters on Patreon. Ashley Anaya, Basil Baldwin, BDEF, Enzo Ignoli, James Phillip, Jason, Jeff Carr, Jeff Tomlinson, Jerry Goldberg, Justin Stewart, Kevin Sanders, Matthew Fain, Ozren Bukrobat, Robert JL, Ruslan Gainatinov, Ryan Augustinovich, Scott DeShanes, Shane Marches, The CYM, Vina Campbell, Vivian Jane Horn. Thank you, comrades. To see what benefits you can get from supporting The Commie's Current on Patreon, go to patreon.com/thecommiescurrent. And with that, I'll see you all next month.